Now, it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So, by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everyone. My last live hour of the week. It's Friday. Welcome to the weekend. I hope you're having a good one. Although I'll be on the Herb Crash and Flower Hour tonight on 420radio.org. If you're into rock and metal, join us 8 o'clock Pacific time on 420radio.org. Also, Stoner Jesus has the night off tonight. So there will be no live Stoner Jesus show after my show tonight. So sorry to have to break the news, but I'm sure you'll get a great replay of Stoner Jesus coming up at 5 o'clock. We just finished up the Radical Rant talking about this body cavity searching, right? And it's disgusting in every respect. I mean, from the trauma suffered by the victims to the egregious destruction of our rights, of our civil liberties, to not even, and such a misguided and inappropriate response to the danger involved, right? I think it was in the Atlantic that I was reading up on this, and the writer in the Atlantic points out that, you know, we've got Border Patrol that seizes tractor trailer loads of drugs. Tons of drugs. And it doesn't affect the drug trade one bit. So we're going to stick our fingers up the ass of somebody and find a few grams and that's going to have an effect? Right? No. Folks, these body cavity searches have nothing to do with searching and finding drugs. They have to do with terrorizing citizens. They know they're not going to find anything up there. How many people? I mean, it happens. People do hide drugs up their ass from time to time or in their vagina from time to time. It happens. I'm not saying it doesn't. But not regularly. Most people, no, are not doing that. Okay? And how much would it have to be, right, that would get you to that point? You know, how desperately scared would you be? And if you do end up being that desperately scared, what does that say about how stupid our laws are that in a traffic stop, you would shove something up your ass to avoid prosecution? How terrible, right? Not like you're carrying plutonium or stolen nuclear codes or anything. It's some weed. It's just ridiculous. And it's happening so much around this country that it can't be thought of as anything but a standard operating procedure in some of these places. And a standard operating procedure designed to humiliate, dehumanize, punish, and to try to steer people away or through this punishment, you know, make the drug user worse than what they actually are. You know, demonizing. And these cases, like I say, are happening all over. Radley Balco writes that about the two cases in New Mexico, where we talked about they had the x-rays and the forced colonoscopy. We've got the Border Patrol agents in New Mexico. We've got a lawsuit in Texas about vaginal searches of women that became standard procedure. Oakland paid $4.6 million to 39 men who were illegally strip searched in public. Similar lawsuit in Chicago. Allegations of in Citrus County, Florida, Coral Springs, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, Mission, Kansas, Milwaukee, Tennessee. It's happening everywhere. And only ending the war on drugs is going to end it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Toker Talk Radio after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Maui Wowie. Acapulco Gold. California Kush. Our strains stretch everywhere, too.
This is the Cannabis Radio Network.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com. Helping Ganjapreneurs grow.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
All you have to do is decriminalize. We don't need a government regulation to tell us this is good pot, that's bad pot. We don't need any of that.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
And if standing for the Constitution make you a wackabird, then I am a very, very proud wackabird.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
So, this piece by Radley Balco, if you want to follow up on it, it's entitled Video Shows White Cops Performing Roadside Cavity Search of Black Man. It's from April 1st on the Washington Post. And it's not an April Fool's joke. The video is there. You can watch the edited video. Now, it doesn't show any of the actual probing. That all takes place off camera. But it's got all the audio. And you can listen to these officers as they protect and serve these black citizens of their community. And I think it's important that you listen to the audio because it gives you, you know, when that cop says, you're going to pay for this one, boy. Right? Boy. Just that you know, unvarnished racism just coming through, right? That's a beautiful thing, right? Facetious. But it's also telling the fallout from this, which is nothing. That cop, the white cop who was the instigator of all this stuff, who pulled a woman over for having legal temporary tags and then instigated a drug dog search and a body cavity search after the traffic stop had been concluded, that guy, he's still working. He still got his job. He wasn't suspended or anything. No, this is another day on the beat for that cop. He's still working. And 6 months after this happened in October, the city of Aiken, South Carolina, put out a press release announcing that for the sixth consecutive year, The Aiken Department of Public Safety, the cops, had earned accreditation from the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies. The department, quote, demonstrates a commitment to professional excellence in policy and practice. And that the chief says, quote, they are trained in a certain way and indoctrinated into a system of policies and procedures that just become part of their everyday work. I'm extremely proud of how they interact with citizens and provide services to our community while maintaining excellence and professionalism, even during some very trying circumstances, end quote. Yes, they very professionally grabbed the hemorrhoids of a prone man on the street in public in the daylight in South Carolina. That's just part of their everyday work. Their systems and policies and procedures, you see. Of course, now they say they won't comment on this pending investigation, this pending lawsuit, I should say, because they did investigate. You know, the cops investigated themselves. You'll be surprised to hear that they found that they did nothing wrong. Amazing, isn't it? And it's not like there isn't standards for this stuff. I'm not here arguing that there should never be body cavity searches. But those things should happen in the context of protecting the safety of inmates, the safety of cops, and the safety of the suspect. If you are booking a guy into the jail and there's the possibility he's got a straight razor somehow, a shank, I don't know how you put that up your ass, but let's just say it's possible. I know it's got to be. Yes, then you can understand why there's a body cavity search. You're putting him into a prison population. You want to make sure they're not hiding anything on him. That makes sense. This is someone pulled over to the side of the road for legal temporary tags. And a guy who wasn't even driving. He's a passenger. He's riding while black. He's not even driving while black. He's just in the car. And because he got busted more than 10 years ago for drugs, he gets to enjoy two men sticking their fingers up his ass on the side of the road in public in broad daylight. So when I love it when you hear those prohibitionists, these anti-legalizers, and they say, well, you know, we don't really lock up that many people for weed, and it doesn't really. Well, here's your direct refutation of that. Here's a guy that got busted over a decade ago, paid his debt to society, served his time, whatever it was, and 10 years later still gets treated like even worse than an animal. It'd be animal cruelty if you did that to an animal. We got some guy sticking his thumb up a chicken's ass over here. We better bust him. Oh, wait, no. Black guy we think has drugs? No problem. Go ahead. Now, the International Association of the Chiefs of Police have actually put together a guide on how, what would be the proper protocols for a body cavity search. Number one. The suspect shall be kept under constant visual surveillance until a body cavity search is conducted or an alternative course of action taken. Okay. Number two, the officer shall consult with his immediate supervisor to determine whether probable cause exists to seek a search warrant for a body cavity search. Did you hear that, folks? A search warrant. That was the thing you didn't hear when I told you the story about the South Carolina cops, did you? No, they didn't even get a search warrant. They just handcuffed people, put them on the ground, and start sticking their fingers up their ass. No warrant. The decision to seek a search warrant shall recognize that a body cavity search is highly invasive of personal privacy and is reasonable only when the suspected offense is of a serious nature and or poses a threat to the safety of officers or others and or the security of the detention facility. The detention facility, right? Not the roadside. It's not even in the ballpark to be talking about what's the procedure to be sticking your fingers up someone's ass on the roadside. These are their procedures. Like, once you've got this suspect at the jail and you're starting to book him, here's the procedure. Number three, if probable cause exists for a body cavity search, an affidavit for a search warrant shall be prepared that clearly defines the nature of the alleged offense and the basis for the officer's probable cause. So that's at the jail, If we can articulate why we think you might have something up your ass, then we'll go get a search warrant for it. Not, hey, you look like a druggie I saw from 10 years ago. Let me stick my fingers up your ass. Number four. On the basis of a search warrant, the body cavity search shall be performed only by a physician or by other medically trained personnel at the physician's direction. Why, you guys make it sound like untrained professionals just jamming their fingers up people's asses might be medically unsound. What, they don't teach that at the police academy anymore? Proper buggering? Okay. Well, you'll note in the South Carolina story, no doctors, right? Cops on the side of the road. And number five. A suspect's mouth may be searched by consent or where there is clear indication that evidence will be found and exigent circumstances exist, which make it probable that evidence would be destroyed. That's the mouth, right? Because you could swallow, destroy evidence. Doesn't work for the butt. So, yeah, this is how crazy the war on drugs gets. This is as crazy as it gets, where we see violating the most personal, basic privacy, sanctity of a human body is less worrisome than letting someone roam around with weed in their butt. we had to do it for his own good. He had marijuana up his ass. We just had to get it out. Because if that marijuana had stayed there, what? What is the big issue that we... No, it's because we want to catch fish, right? We want to catch criminals. It doesn't have to do with protecting and serving anymore. It has to do with searching and arresting. It has to do with making quotas. It has to do with getting fines paid and private prison cell beds filled. The cops now have just become a collection arm of the government. In a lot of cases, especially when we're talking about traffic violations and we're talking about drug violations. It has nothing to do with protecting us. It has everything to do with raising money, and keeping budgets, keeping jobs. Hopefully enough people are learning about this that it will start to have some effect. Maybe we can start to move the needle in the other direction. Maybe get people to back away from their hate and prejudice just long enough to recognize that even if someone is the dirtiest scumbag, welfare grifting, homeless loser asshole stashing PCP up his ass, even if it's that guy, he's got rights. He's got fundamental rights. And where we start to understand that if we don't provide fundamental protection, fundamental rights, fundamental liberty to the most reviled people, then it's not going to be good for anyone. It's, you know, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And by the way, when I'm saying reviled people, please don't take that for me saying black people are reviled. I'm saying how society looks at drug users and the lower class and the minorities and so forth. It's not my view. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. But this is a major turning point in America. People are starting to recognize the problem of mass incarceration. And we just recently saw Bill Clinton stumping for his wife, Hillary Clinton, who was heckled by some Black Lives Matter protesters recently, and he came back and his response could have been written on Fox News, saying something about, well, you people are just supporting those gangbangers who got 13-year-olds hopped up on crack and then took those very lives you're supposed to care about. He's really stepped in it this time, hasn't he? But this is the mass incarceration problem. This is the war on drugs problem. This is the militarization of the police problem.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Sometimes Liebermater just randomly picks the most perfect break. Yeah, they don't need no stinking badges or search warrants or probable causes. They're just going to stick their fingers up your ass
because it's fun.
It's 420 here on a beautiful, beautiful April day in Portland, Oregon. We got to take a break. Safety meeting is happening right now. So let's all be safe, folks.
How high do you like your profit margin?
CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your canna business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your canna business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour, feeling a whole lot safer. Hope you are, too. Gonna change focus a little bit here, because I can't talk about the cavity searches anymore. Just, that's enough of that. Just, how depressing, huh? Instead, I'd like to focus on the drug czar. That's right. Let's talk about the drug czar. Our drug czar's name is Michael Botticelli, in case you didn't know. And the news from the New York Times Magazine and the interview by Anna Marie Cox, the headline, Michael Botticelli is not in favor of legalization. Wow, we're surprised. See, the fact is that the drug czar statutorily cannot be in favor of legalization. The very definition of the job requires that the head of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, a.k.a. the drug czar, must oppose any attempts to move marijuana out of Schedule 1 for any purpose whatsoever, medical or recreational. He has to oppose it. It's in his job title. Michael Botticelli, Director of Office of National Drug Control Policy that will never legalize marijuana. Might as well be on the business cards. Now, it's interesting, though, in that Botticelli is our first drug czar who is not overwhelmingly a part of the law enforcement community. You know, we've had General Barry McCaffrey, and we had police officers and so forth that have done this job. But this drug czar, Michael Botticelli, is part of the recovery community. He's a recovering alcoholic. And he thinks this gives him a different perspective on the war on drugs. And to some extent, it's true in that he doesn't see it from that perspective of lock them all up and throw away the key. The only problem is somebody who's coming from this Alcoholics Anonymous recovery community is willing to substitute the hard jail cell for the soft jail cell of rehab. He's willing to endorse a policy that tells us all of us cannabis consumers, that we're somehow sick or damaged or defective and require some sort of re-education and medical treatment. He says, quote, we want to focus on public health strategies, end quote. Which is fine. I'm all for public health, but on a voluntary basis. I'm all for educating people. I'm all for providing funds for marijuana treatment for the people who want it, not for people who are just busted for it. But if someone voluntarily says, you know what, I smoke too much pot, I'd like some help. Sure, let's get these guys some help. But not mandatorily. And that's the difference here, is that this drug czar is like a Kevin Sabet type who wants to keep marijuana illegal so that there is this pressure. There is this pressure from the threat of the hard jail cell that will entice you to take the soft jail cell, the rehab. So here's the quote that caught my attention. And Anna Marie Cox asks, has your experience with addiction informed your opinion on legalization and decriminalization? And the drug czar answers, quote, I'll take off my policy hat and talk about it as a person in recovery. Fundamentally, I know my recovery is my responsibility, and I have been in recovery for 27 years. But walking down the street and smelling pot everywhere is really challenging to people in recovery. I think that there is a middle ground where you can move people away from the criminal justice system without some of the challenges that might come along with legalization. Anna Marie Cox answers, but alcoholics can walk down the street and smell alcohol. Would you want to make alcohol illegal? And he answers, no. Okay, so let's just deconstruct this a little bit, right? Here's a guy who's been in recovery from alcohol for 27 years. But it's a problem for him to smoke pot or to smell pot when he's walking down the street. You're not the pot smoker, dude. How is this hurting you? Now, are you saying it's hurting the people that are recovering marijuana addicts that are in recovery and they have to walk places and smell marijuana? Oh, no. I totally understand, Mr. Drug Czar. See, I'm a person in recovery from obesity. I'm trying to lose weight. I have this weight problem. Had it all my life. I'm in recovery from obesity. When I walk down the street, I have to smell hot dogs and hamburgers and donuts in these shops all around town. Sometimes people are eating this stuff on the patios. I can see it. I can smell it. And as a person in recovery from obesity, oh, it's so tough. I have to walk by this stuff every day that it smells so good. So you know what I do? I walk by. That's what you got to do. See, you can't open up your sentence saying, fundamentally, I know my recovery is my responsibility, and then complain, but there's pot everywhere. I smell pot everywhere. Yeah, that's your responsibility to deal with the fact that there are temptations out there that may be bad for you. Just like I have to deal with the fact that I can walk 3-4 blocks in any direction in any major city, and there's a Subway or a McDonald's or some ice cream or something that I probably shouldn't eat. And we all have to take that responsibility for ourselves. He goes on to explain what he'd like to see. Anna Marie Cox asks, are you saying that there should just be more safe spaces for people who are in recovery where there aren't drugs present? He answers, well, think about what we've done with tobacco. We've changed the availability. We've really changed the culture. And our smoking rate is at its lowest level. Unfortunately, I still smoke. We got a guy who's a tobacco addict lecturing us about the smell of pot everywhere. Okay. But let's analyze what he said there. We should think about what we've done with tobacco. Okay. Did we arrest anyone? No. Did we ticket anyone? No. Did we force anyone into rehab? No. Did we require that they take pee tests to make sure they don't turn up positive for nicotine? No. Did we seize any of their assets? No. Did we cost them their jobs, their scholarships, their financial aid, their public housing? Nope, 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 but nope. Okay, so I'm with you there so far, Mr. Drug Czar. Let's look at what we did with tobacco, which, by the way, when I was a kid, 7 out of 10 high school seniors had tried tobacco. 7 out of 10 had tried tobacco in 1985. Today, it's fewer than 4 in 10. And it's fewer than have tried marijuana. And again, we didn't arrest anybody, ticket them, criminalize them, stigmatize them in any way. So what did we do with tobacco? Well, he says we changed the availability, we really changed the culture. Well, we didn't really change the availability for adults so much. We did get rid of the cigarette vending machines, but you can still find those in some states where it's an adults-only venue. We did require the smokes to be put behind a locked counter. But if you're an adult who wants to smoke cigarettes, I don't think your access has really declined much. They're still at the 7-Elevens. They're still at the gas stations. They're still at some diners and stuff even sell them. So the availability didn't really go down. Did we change the culture? Yes, we changed the culture in a few ways. By restricting where people could smoke. You can't smoke in airplanes or... Yeah. Younger listeners, you could actually smoke in airplanes back in the day. It's amazing. You can't smoke in airplanes. You can't smoke in restaurants and you can't smoke in public places. And you have to smoke 25 feet away from the door and all that. All that had something to do with it. And cigarette taxes had something to do with it. But you know what really had the most to do with the changing culture of tobacco? The facts. Just getting the facts out to people. Just people being educated as to, hey, this shit kills you and ruins your skin, makes you hack. It's a terrible habit. Don't do it. Costs too much money. Those things are what have really brought our smoking rates to the lowest levels ever. In combination, I still think the information, the health knowledge about smoking has done the most for us. But yes, we've also put the smokes behind the counter. Checked IDs better. If that's where the drug czar wants to go with marijuana, great. I'm for that. Let's treat, you know, let's make that the slogan now. Not treat marijuana like alcohol. Let's treat marijuana like cigarettes. Treat marijuana like cigarettes. They're really more akin to each other when you talk about the effect on others, right? See, when we say treat marijuana like alcohol, we kind of put ourselves in this, we paint ourselves into a corner in some respects. In one respect, treat marijuana like alcohol is an insult to marijuana because marijuana is not like alcohol. It doesn't make you violent. It doesn't make you dangerous on the roads. It doesn't make you puke on people's shoes, right? It doesn't turn you into an asshole, right? Marijuana is not like alcohol. Marijuana is really, from the outsider perspective, is really more like tobacco. It creates a smell and a smoke that can be bothersome to some people, but it doesn't really impair in the same sense that alcohol impairs. It might make you giggly and have some time dilation and some perceptive issues, perception issues, but not impairment so much. So it's really a little more like tobacco in that respect. And hey, if we want to go with that, great. Because that would mean the marijuana smoking age would be 18 or 19 in a lot of states. Although I believe Hawaii just raised their smoking age to 21, and California's looking at that too. You know my stand on this. I don't care what the age is, but pick one, right? I hate this. I hate this purgatory, this limbo that our young people end up in between the ages of 18 and 21, right? Like, what are you? Well, you're old enough to get shot in Afghanistan. And you're old enough to vote for Donald Trump for president, and you're old enough to smoke a cigarette, but no, we can't give you a beer, and no, you can't rent a car, and no, you can't buy any marijuana in Colorado. And I don't make any sense. Pick an age and let's go with it. Now, if I had my preference, I'd make the universal age 21. Can't join the army till you're 21, is the main reason for that. You want to see a rapid decline in the deployment of our forces and the strength of our military, raise the military enlistment age to 21. In your 18, 19, 20, man, you're just, you know, you're crazy, to be honest. As a male, I can't speak for the women, but 18-year-old men are crazy. You're so full of testosterone and hormones, and you feel invulnerable. That's why military likes the age being low, is that that's the age where you can convince people that, hey, you see this piece of cloth? You ought to put yourself in front of bullets for it. You can sell that to an 18-year-old. 25-year-old, tougher sell. A little tougher sell. But whatever the age is, let's pick an age and go with it, right? You want to make it 18? I'm cool with it. Let's make it 18. I got another idea. Let's make the universal age for everything 21 or your high school diploma. You get a high school diploma at 16, great. You can drink, you can smoke, you can smoke weed, you can vote for president, you can enlist in the military. You want to see those dropout rates plummet? Make your legal drinking age, your legal toking age, make all that contingent on your high school diploma.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Seed to sale, clicks to conversions, and more. You're listening to the Cannabis Radio Network.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Just going through my emails. Got the confirmation for the Blazers versus Nugs game. It's taking place this next Wednesday, and the pre-party, which is going to feature Cliff Robinson, a.k.a. Uncle Spliffy, is going to be held at Refuge PDX. And I just got confirmation that they've got a table, internet, and electricity for me, so we will be able to stream live from Refuge PDX this Wednesday for the Blazers versus Nugs pre-party. And cross my fingers, I hope we get Uncle Spliffy on the show with us. That'll be a lot of fun. Portland Normal will be joining us out there as well. I just got the information out to Herb Thrasher, Scott Gordon, the executive director of Portland Normal. All right, so let me get back to some data, because I was telling you about that Oregon border effect, the Washington-Oregon border effect, and economists have seen this before with respect to cigarettes and alcohol, both of which sell better in Oregon than sell in Washington because we got lower taxes on both of those things and lower prices. So they're seeing a similar effect here in Washington State, and I found the blog post that was referenced from the Oregon Office of Economic Analysis. Josh Lehner put this together, Border Effect Weed Edition, he calls it. And what it points out is that in Washington State, they had a slide from their Washington State Economic and Review Forecast Council that said, Oregon legalization may have affected Clark County, but statewide sales continue to grow. Now, just geographics, so you know what we're talking about. Clark County is the county right across the river from Portland, Oregon. It houses Vancouver, Washington, and up until recently housed the best-selling pot shops in the state. The number one, by a long shot, was Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, but another one was coming up as number three for a long time. And Vancouver's not the biggest place. In fact, the four shops in Vancouver for a while were outselling the 15 shops in Seattle combined. And how could that be? Well, because Vancouver's right across the river from Portland, Oregon. And so once sales began in Vancouver, Oregonians went across the river to buy weed. Even before it was legal for us to possess it, like we weren't legal to possess until July of 2015. But even before that, we were crossing the river and, you know, buying weed. So once it became legal in July, there was a great increase in how much weed sales Clark County was getting. They went from $250,000 in weed sales to over $400,000 in weed sales. But then in October, a huge drop. And understand that, like, the weed sales numbers have increased every month pretty much, either increased or stayed steady every month since they started their legal sales in July of 2014. But in October, a huge drop. Clark County went from over 400,000 in sales to under 250,000 in sales. And that huge drop corresponds to October 1st, 2015, when legal recreational sales began in Oregon. Once all those people in Oregon didn't have to cross the river and go through all that traffic to go get some legal weed, they saw a huge drop. And in fact, prior to the legal sales in Oregon, from before October 2015, Clark County, Washington, accounted for 12% of Washington State's overall sales. 12%. One out of 8 grams of weed sold in Washington State was coming out of Clark County. In January, that's down to 7% of the state. So a huge drop for the sales in Clark County, Washington, and not just Clark County. They went and the bloggers there at the Oregon Economic Council, Office of Economic Analysis, took a look at this for the rest of the border counties across the, basically across the river, right? And also, geographically speaking, you got to imagine what the state of Oregon looks like. The Columbia River cuts into Oregon on the east and crosses kind of over the north. It kind of cuts off the tip of the northeast tip of Oregon, but then it matches the Oregon border, the border with Washington at the Columbia River Gorge. And this happens at about the Dalles, but actually a little bit before that. So you got about 100 miles of Columbia River that separate Oregon and Washington all the way up to Astoria, at the end. And so they took a look at the counties that border Oregon on the Columbia River, because the rest of the border is all desolate area, mountainous area. There's not going to be cross traffic for anything. So these Washington border counties include Clark County, Cowlitz County, Klickitat, Pacific, and Skamania counties. And they took a look at their sales figures after Oregon started selling marijuana compared to the rest of Washington and Seattle. So in Washington overall, since October, since Oregon started selling weed, overall in Washington, sales are up 10%. In the Seattle metro area, sales are up 25%. So the overall trend in Washington is a continued rise in marijuana sales as there's more outlets and just more production. But in the five counties bordering Oregon, there was a net 35% decrease in sales. Clark County, down 39%. Pacific County, right across from Astoria, down 36%. Klickitat County had the lowest decrease, down 47% since Oregon started selling marijuana. So the border effect is real, that's for sure. And as I mentioned in the drug war data mining, it can only benefit us cannabis consumers. There's some numbers on Oregon marijuana that Noel Crombie at the Oregonian has put together that point out that the average price per gram in Oregon is $13.67. The medical gram is down to $10.96, $11 a gram, just about. There are 72,937 medical marijuana patients in Oregon, almost 73,000. And we have 418 registered medical marijuana dispensaries in the state, with 167 of them in Portland. And that's, okay, so with just these medical places, 400 or so, and only allowed to sell us 7 grams of flower at a time, we've got the price down to $13 a gram, $13.67 a gram. The state licensing department, the OLCC, estimates that they're going to issue 850 recreational marijuana licenses. So we're going to go from having 400 places to shop to over 1,200 places to shop? Is that what they're telling me there? And we're going to go from just having the medical growers supplying the market where they can only grow 6 plants per patient, and there's 73,000 patients. So whatever 73,000 times 6 is, 420,000, how appropriate. 420,000 some odd plants, right? We're going to go from that to having numerous licensed grows with thousands of plants. We've already got the price down in this area of the country to where in Washington State, the largest retailer right across the river is selling weed at $10.08. And we're going to just increase the production. We're going to increase the outlets here. Folks, we are going to be looking at the $50 ounce. Mark my words, we are going to see the $50 ounce in Oregon. And this is the other part of this continued legalization. This border war in Washington and Oregon is going to start to have a massive effect elsewhere. We've already seen the Supreme Court refused to review the case from Nebraska, where they complained, oh, boo-hoo, Colorado legalized, and it makes our prohibition hard. Well, imagine that ramped up to the whole country level as dealers all across the country in illegal states are forced to compete with legal $50 ounces in Oregon. There's going to be enormous trafficking of marijuana. And I hate to say it because I know with under the Cole memo that one of the federal things is that there shouldn't be any trafficking of marijuana. We should fight that in every way. Seed to sale tracking and stepped up enforcement and all that. But none of this is this law, supply and demand don't give a shit. Don't care what our laws are. When weed starts selling for $50 an ounce in a store here in Oregon, you can damn well bet it's going to be in the trunks of cars making its way eastward. No doubt about it. And then we got to worry that when that happens and when those busts start happening, that people will start to complain and bitch that it's, oh, well, see, we never should have legalized. We told you you couldn't keep it in state. We need to start recognizing that the only way prohibition even kind of works is if everybody is prohibiting. Only under national prohibition does it even kind of work, and even then it doesn't really work. But once you have 4 states growing marijuana and selling it legally, the rest of the prohibition in the nation is doomed just by the laws of supply and demand. And this competition between Washington and Oregon, between their 2 states producing and producing and dropping that price through volume, and both having more and more retail outlets that continue to drop the price and competing with each other over licensing fees and tax rates, wait till we throw California in that mix. Oh my, wait till it's the entire West Coast, Oregon, Washington, California, Arizona, Nevada. The entire western fourth of the United States as a legal marijuana commercial and growing zone. How much more does that depress the price of marijuana? How much more does that increase the supply to flow eastward to all these other states and all these other prohibition lands? It's inevitable. It can't be stopped. And that's why, in my mind, it's so important that we pass any legalization we can right now. I get people that get on my case because, well, you know, this part isn't good, or there's no home grow, or this isn't right. This particular clause or this business setup isn't perfect. And I'm willing to entertain those questions in 2020 after we have 10 legal states. When we have 10 legal states, I'm willing to start saying, okay, now we can start asking for better. But we need to get enough legal states that it's impossible to overturn. If we're stuck with just the current 4 legal states and the situations I talked about keep happening more and more across the country, it's easier for them to shut down little states like a Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, than to try to attack the entire western fourth of the United States. Legalize now. Fix it later. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. Come back and close up the show. There is no Stoner Jesus live show tonight, unfortunately. And join me on 420radio.org at 8 o'clock if you like Metal Marijuana Mayhem with the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Back in two.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Every strain, every sale, every medical study. Keep it right here on the Cannabis Radio Network.
Great websites today need expert web design and development, and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
Thanks, everybody, and thank you again for another wonderful week here on cannabisradio.com. I'm really excited about the upcoming events that we'll be covering for you here. Coming up next week on Cannabis Radio on the Russ Belville Show, we've got Dr. Mitch on Monday. Then on Tuesday, I will be attending the National Cannabis Industry Association's Oregon Caucus. That'll be Tuesday night. And then Wednesday, we'll be coming to you live from the Blazers versus Nugs pre-party at Refuge PDX here in Portland. And then that night, I will be at the Blazers versus Nuggets game. Blazers, of course, playoff bound, but nobody's getting past Golden State. Let's just all admit it. Then on Thursday, there'll be no live show on Thursday because I'll be flying to Washington, D.C. for my Friday coverage of the Students for Sensible Drug Policy 2016 conference. That's taking place Friday and Saturday in Washington, D.C. Followed on Sunday and Monday by my coverage of Mark Klieman's Cannabis Summit in New York City. I will be tabling there and doing the live show on Monday from the Cannabis Summit. Then the following Tuesday through Thursday, 419, 420, and 421, the United Nations General Assembly Special Session in New York City. I'll be covering that as well. So stay tuned to learn whether I'll be doing it live or not. We don't know what the setup will be there for that week. We may just have to go with pre-recorded shows, but we should have plenty of great coverage for you, plenty of great stuff to pre-record. All of the top international drug reformers will be at this United Nations summit, so we will definitely get you some great audio. Then the following week, we make our way to Newark, or back, oh, I'm sorry, following weekend, we make our back to the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, and then we make our way to the South. Last weekend of April, I'll be in Raleigh, North Carolina, joining the Unity Cypher, the torch run that's going from Portland, Maine, all the way to Miami, Florida, to unite East Coast cannabis organizations. I'll join them in Raleigh. We'll make our way down to Charlotte. We'll eventually end up in Atlanta, Jacksonville, and Miami that week. So again, stay tuned to my Twitter feed as far as what the show schedule will be. It'll be pretty ad hoc since I'll be on a road trip. So much coming up in the next few months. I won't be back here in Portland for until Memorial Day, I think. So I'm going to take advantage of this beautiful weekend. And I hope you have a great weekend, too. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate all your support. You can always send me donations if you like. PayPal to Russ at RadicalRuss.com. All donations appreciated. They helped me bring this show to you absolutely free for the past 6 years. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.